form. Today is February 5th meeting, and we will pass the gavel to chair of the health of the House Healthcare Committee, and he will gavel in the Healthcare Access Subcommittee.
I reconvene the Subcommittee on Healthcare Access of the House Committee on Healthcare.
Nicely done.
And, you know, I understand the humor in that, but it's actually quite significant. And as we go further in a very short period of time, I think these committees will be joined fully and officially. So as we work through those details, we're very pleased and privileged to have our colleagues from the House join us to help us tackle this most critical issue in the crisis facing Oregon. If I could have comments from staff with regard to tonight's agenda and perhaps some of the comments regarding the guiding principles that we worked on last committee.
Thank you, Chair. In your packet is the agenda, and tonight there will be some invited testimony on different perspectives of transparency by Vicki Gates and from representative of the Insurance Commission, and then a couple representatives from the insurance industry to tie things up there. Last meeting, we did go over the draft guiding principles, and there's two versions in your packet. The first one, and we won't go through these tonight, but just to let you know what's there, is the revised version with the language included that was discussed at the last meeting. You'll see it underlined, the parts that were added and then struck through. On the second page of that is a number 7. There was a recommendation that we put some language in there regarding liability. So we put some draft language in there that probably needs better wordsmithing or work from you as a committee. The second version, and you'll see a second version of the revised or the principles with the words external feedback in the top there. We did receive recommendations from people who were listening or in the audience that had other recommendations, so we went ahead and did a second draft of the guiding principles and included their draft language and suggestions as well, just for your review at some point. So I think at this point the chairs were wanting to perhaps have you review these, not necessarily read through them today, but perhaps feedback at a later date.
I think with the goal of officially adopting them at the next meeting. So we want to be pretty familiar with them and be ready for some good, direct, spirited debate as we officially adopt the principles. I think we're very close. I don't want to put too much wet blanket sound on that. We're very close, but I just want us to look at these a little bit more, think, perhaps more importantly, feel on them as we go forward and get ready to adopt them next week. All right, first up, informational meeting. Transparency, reporting on cost and quality, the ever-present, omnipotent, she is everywhere, Vicki Gates.
Omnipotent.
Omniscient.
Thank you, Senator.
I'll bet everyone on the committee it's a word.
Okay. Somebody needs to come give me a little assistance here.
So much for omnipotent.
I would note that the co-chair is actually.
Well, now see, that's what
week.
Happens when you, like when you last, use that kind of description. Now, I admit that I resorted to PowerPoint when you guys gave me a late invitation because it comes from years of being a road warrior, and if we don't get this to work pretty quickly, there are printed copies that are available. So while we're getting this, one of the main reasons I wanted to use it, I want to show you a couple of screenshots of what some other states are doing. But I'm Vicki Gates. I am a member of the Health Policy Commission.
Good girl. Thank you for your help. Good doing.
And I, right, this is my, I want to talk to you a little bit about transparency and the way we have thought about it and basically what it means. I think it's a pretty simple concept. It's accessible, understandable, and meaningful information on quality and cost for payers, purchasers, and consumers. One of the things that I think is interesting now is that everybody who is talking about transformation and a new value-based healthcare system is talking to some extent about transparency. And I have where IOM put this in their second report, which is number 7. The need for transparency or public accountability. Now, there are a lot of customers, and I think that's one of the reasons when people talk about this concept, it gets a little complicated. And we have a lot of reasons that we want to look at it, and a lot of the focus has been on consumers, but the reason is much more complicated than that. One of the major ways more transparent information has helped is, in fact, with providers themselves as a way to benchmark and improve quality. You are seeing now purchasers who are more and more aggressive about a value-based purchasing agenda. They are looking for ways to define what they want in quality, and they are looking for incentives for efficiency and quality. And, of course, a lot of the discussion now is around consumers. What kind of information do they need for the decisions that they want to make on healthcare and providers? But also, there's a real increase in resources for consumers to look at how to maintain their health. This is a quick slide that says, does it matter if you put this information out? Some of this is old data, but basically, when public information on quality performance goes out, quality activities improve, and it makes a difference in the way people respond to the issues. New York State was one of the leaders. When they began to put out coronary information, they had an improvement in performance. We are lucky here in Oregon, and this is someone you may actually want to talk to. Dr. Judith Hibbert is a national expert on consumers, how consumers look at information, how they respond to quality initiatives, and it might be interesting for the committee to think about taking advantage of that. CMS recently announced that they, in fact, saw public transparency produce some improvements. They have a special initiative on hospital care. Now, I think it's easy to talk about transparency, but if transparency is really going to be useful, it seems to me that the real value is what's the quality of the information that we're making available.
Vicki, let me interrupt you for a question from Senator Bates.
Just a quick question. You may not be able to answer. It's okay if you can't, but go back to the slide on the bypass information from New York. This information was updated later, and it continued to be significant. What I don't know, and you may know, was you know, we knew they had competing bypass teams in a small geographical area. Some of them were doing a lot of cases, some a few cases. The small number of cases had the most bad outcomes or problems, and we knew that the golden number was at that time make 100 a year. But the question really comes down to, did people start saying, I want to go to this team or this hospital instead of this hospital to get it done, or did some of the programs close down? Do you know what actually happened as a result? Because I know they improved their numbers.
I'm not sure what all of the factors were, but there are a couple of other things I've looked at that do indicate that people change the choices they make when they are confronted with quality data that is persuasive.
But in that short term, Mr. Chair, I believe I remember the major thing that happened was individuals who were doing bypass surgery and having lousy results stopped doing it. It wasn't they closed down teams. It was a fairly large number of low-performing individual surgeons stopped doing the procedure.
And one of the immediate concerns for the state of Oregon is because we're still in the era when certain parts of hospital procedures are well compensated and others are not, there's a constant push to have certain types of procedures done in your hospital, of which this is one. And the battle over these things continues on a financial basis, but not necessarily on best practices basis. So this kind of information is really important that we get out there.
It is critically important that we get it out there because it has a lot more implications than just what consumers will do. it really is people who decide that I'm on the bottom of the list and I'm going to get out of business. A hospital that decides to take it out of their line of business because they can't appropriately support it. A purchaser who decides to make a different decision about what they do. If you don't have the data, the discussion doesn't happen, the improvement doesn't happen.
But if I could interject and maybe ask Mitch a question. Physicians were voluntarily getting out of that subspecialty. Were they doing that because the consumers were looking at the data and going, ooh, I'm not going there, I'm going over here? And enough of those consumers, you know, that it became a market force.
See, this is a three-year change. This didn't happen with... There were just some very bad actors that said they don't want to be in the table next year because their results were... I mean, you know, it's a few outliers that make that kind of a difference.
You know, and I think when you look at this, because there's been so much focus lately on consumer-directed healthcare and on the role of the consumer and how important is the consumer in changing healthcare, that one of the things that you need to remember is that there are multiple audiences motivated in multiple ways. And so what you're hoping when you put the right information out there, even if it is not always the best information, is that you will create positive change from a number of different players operating off of different bases. And that's what's happened.
Please proceed.
So it really is the quality of the information that's available. And that, of course, is one of the reasons that we have a lot of debate about transparency. People are concerned about how good is the information. So you've got that issue, and you have the issue of the ability to get it to the user when it's needed and to get it in a format that works for people. And I've just put some things here that are pretty obvious. I think last time, Senator Bates, you referred to this as a cottage industry. And certainly we all know that the healthcare system is fragmented. We do not have a comprehensive information infrastructure, and we don't have the ability to exchange data when we need it. We do need improvements in the way we measure. I mean, if you think about what we measure, we are really just beginning in many ways to start that process. A lot of measurement processes may be happening at individual players' level, but in fact, one of the points I'd like to make is that there often is a lot of power if you get some community collaboration. If one health plan goes out and wants to take a look at a doctor's performance, say, around a set of issues with diabetic care, they will be lucky, unless they totally control the practice, if they can get half of the physicians, perhaps, that they get the numbers that are adequate. If you go across the community, you have more ability to measure and have that measure be accepted as valid. You have more ability to build front-ended agreement. You have more ability not to have statistical issues that are raised. So I think it makes a great deal of difference to do that. Just as an example, from the quality perspective, when I was at the Oregon Healthcare Quality Corporation, we did a project on chronic care that was sort of a proof of concept. And instead of sending out information from all of the plans, that admittedly this is administrative data, it was pooled. So the focus wasn't by plan. The focus was practitioner and patient. And even though the data had many of the problems of administrative data in terms of timeliness, it was useful. And we know that from going out and doing focus groups with clinicians who got the data. So community collaboration can be important, and it's also part of how you put kind of a stamp of trustworthiness, because that's another issue. It's got to be accessible. It's got to be relatively timely. And, in fact, somebody has to believe that they can trust it. Now, this is the most recent survey I could find that says people actually care about this, that they think it is important or somewhat important, that they have different information on quality of care, that they have information on the cost of care, and they'd like to feel like the people who are paying the bills spend some time thinking about how to reimburse for quality.
What, Vicki, could you back up to that?
Yeah, like that?
I wasn't going too fast.
Well, and I'm looking at percent, and I'm adding these up, and it's well over 100% any way you want to add it.
Those can't be percents.
No. Add the two to the right and you end up with the one on the left.
Right, you go this way. Somewhat important, very important, and the total is somewhat or very important. Which means that basically 95% of people think that, yeah, this matters. And I think it's interesting that there's a pretty large number who think it's important that people start thinking about better ways to reimburse quality.
Mr. Chair.
Senator.
The third one is insurance companies identify and reward doctors and hospitals to achieve excellence, quality, and efficiency of care. Is that the way it's written? I assume they said, would that be important they're doing,
right.
Not that their perception is that's happening now.
They said, would it be important? In all cases, they said, how important is it to you?
Okay.
Not, do you think this is what's
going
happening
on right now. Okay.
In your health care system?
Thanks.
You know what's very interesting about that slide? We don't have to go back, but the very important numbers are significantly higher in every case than the somewhat in all of the categories.
Well, think about how much information has been out over the last few years that's made the front page. Well, even look at the last issue if you're old enough to get your AARP magazine, which I am. And one of the things you'll open up and you've got a full-page spread that says, by the way, is your hospital nice and clean? With a box about MRSA infections, which, you know, most of us are just now really hearing about. So there's a huge amount of information. You have Business Week talking about who are the best hospitals in the United States. You have Newsweek. You have a whole different level of discussion about this set of issues. And at the same time, you have people who basically are being told this is going to cost you more. Well, when you start really realizing that something is going to cost you more, then, and you're also hearing that, by the way, you may be spending big bucks for something that may not be great quality, it sort of does catch your attention.
Yeah, sure. But there is still, if you look in the very important category, a significant drop-off from quality to cost, which I think is informative.
And don't worry about the Mick Jagger thing. He's been about the AARP. Mick Jagger's been eligible to join for 10 years. So,
but, you know, when it comes to health care, people really do care more about quality.
Right, Ms. Chair. But, it's just quite simply people don't necessarily think as much about the cost when somebody else is paying the bill.
Well, you know, that's absolutely proven, that economically when people pay more, they make different choices, particularly if they're choices that are discretionary.
Mm-hmm.
But the other thing that a number of studies have shown is they don't always make smart choices. So when you begin to transfer cost, I think you need to be careful to think about what it is that you want to incentivize. You don't want people not to make choices about the more preventive, lower cost mm-hmm. side of the system. Because when it comes to the other side, they typically don't have a choice.
Right.
So structuring those types of programs and trying to think that issue through, it's not easy. It is amazing how rapidly things are growing in terms of how much information is available. It is proliferating rapidly from all types of organization. And if you're web savvy and if you're patient and you really have the will and want information, it's amazing how much is available. The issue, of course, is it going to be the right information, and are you going to get it when you need it? Now, here's an example on hospitals, and I just sat down and thought, okay, if I were looking, where are all the different places that I could go? And the top one's interesting because Jayco, 2 years ago, you could not have gone on their site and pulled down a really nice, clean, little quality report that told you whether that hospital had a quality award, how they did on a whole series of indicators, et cetera. You can do that now. And that, in fact, raises some...
Vicki, could you tell us what JCO is?
Oh, I'm sorry. That's the Joint Commission on the Accreditation of Health Organizations, and it is the organization that makes that accredits the hospital probably that you go to, and it also accredits most other organizations. It's a good one for consumers to know because in many cases you're either selecting a hospital or you may be selecting a facility for mental health purposes, or you may be selecting for some other type of treatment facility. They've made a major effort over the last few years to be much more focused on quality improvement. There's more change there in a very short period of time than almost any other organization I've looked at.
But is it good comparative data where you can compare? I mean, just
yes.
Not that they got an, you know, this hospital got 17 awards here and this one got 22. I mean, does it
no.
focus down into?
Basically, what you can do is you can go in and you can see those issues, but you also will be able to see whether this hospital meets the patient safety criteria. You'll be able to see how they have performed on the national quality goals, which have to do with health care, with heart attack, pneumonia, a whole series of indicators. And you'll be able to see how did they score. Were they in the top 10%? How did they look according to the median? How did they look nationally? And how did they look inside your state?
Compare infection rates and...
Well, you can see what they're doing. In some cases, you can do infection rates. Infection rates is an area that, in fact, we have a much more selective database. But it's improving because, for example, CMS has added at least the antibiotic pre- and post-surgery. And you're going to see that area improve and more indicators come online. But it's a real, it's, you know, 2 years ago, you couldn't have done it. It wouldn't have been available. And one of the things, too, then, that raises, at least for those people who are in the hospital business, is the whole issue of alignment. You know, there are so many resources out there that people are saying, how does it skew people's priorities? And consumers, then, you can see what kind of research project you might have if you were a consumer and trying to do that. So I wanted to show you a couple of things that some other states are doing in this arena, just as ideas that might jog your... Minnesota, they asked their health cabinet to do a website that would be designed to link people to a wide range of health information. It's screened. It's very easily navigated, which is a key for any of these systems. And it gives a Minnesota citizen a really broad range of information to take a look at. Another one that I think is, since you're looking for ideas, another one that I think is interesting is Massachusetts Health Quality Partners. This is a broad-based public-private collaboration. They're engaged in information at the clinic level on physician performance, and they've made possible a kind of statewide patient satisfaction survey. So you can see both clinical data and you can see information on how patients feel about the services that they receive. The other thing that's interesting about this collaborative is they are doing a great deal of guideline work in a collaborative way. In 2005, when they did new pediatric preventive care guidelines, every major insurer, all of the major organizations signed on, and they were uniformly distributed to all of the clinicians in that state. That has a lot of power for changing the way something is done. I want to show you what our own hospital quality report. This is one of the things that the Oregon Health Policy Commission worked with the Office of Health Policy and research on. And so if you have an interest, you can go in and look at the volume for those procedures where volume is important, and you can look at mortality data across a series of procedures. And you have the ability to compare hospitals. There's a great deal of piloting effort going on now. CMS is funding 6 transparency pilots to measure and report on physician performance. And Robert Wood Johnson just recently announced 14 And the reason I want to bring this to your attention is it's focused on chronic care, which I believe in your work during the interim you really identified as a key area where we need to improve care. It's around providers measuring and publicly reporting performance. It's got that power of the community collaborative. It's designed to help consumers understand their role in providing health care, which is a real key to improving what chronic care looks like. And we have an Oregon organization who got one of these, the Oregon Healthcare Quality Corporation grant. So we have $600,000 of Robert Wood Johnson money and hopefully contributions from other resources that are going to help develop indicators, test those, and make them publicly available.
Who received the grant?
Yeah. Oregon Healthcare Quality Corporation.
Where are they located?
They're located here. They're located in Portland. Nancy Clark is their executive director. She would be more than happy to come down and talk to you about it. I and half of the state are on the steering committee. And it's a nice opportunity for the state of Oregon. It builds on a project that they've been engaged in to try and develop some common indicators around ambulatory care performance. It'll start with administrative data, with claims data, and then hopefully we'll be able to move to more clinical data.
Well, we've got Nancy coming down Wednesday, so that'll be great.
See, the timing's perfect.
Exactly.
Now, I wanted to, since you want to know what people think you might do, there were some recommendations from the Health Policy Commission. We do think this is an area that the state of Oregon could make a big difference in without making a major investment. It is not reasonable when the state spends the money that it does and when we contemplate trying to bring everybody into this process to expect that everybody else will pick up the cost of figuring out how to do this well, how to measure well, how to distribute it well, how to get consumers. So this is one of those opportunities when a little bit of public money might provide some leverage. And we've listed some of the reasons that we think this is important. The model, we didn't try and identify what the model would look like. There are a number of state models that are possible in doing this kind of work. The important issue is that it is across stakeholders, that it has a public-private basis, and it's got credibility with citizens who live in the state as non-biased.
Sure. Senator Morris.
If you could back up, Vicki, please. Thank you. Could you elaborate briefly on the bullet point, address issues of legal discovery and liability, what the commission had in mind?
One of the issues that really does come up with data, and it certainly has been an issue, and it's the reason the Patient Safety Commission is structured the way that it is, there's a lot of sensitivity about litigation. There's a lot of sensitivity about unintended consequences. There's a lot of sensitivity about whether or not data can be pulled out and used in ways that it was not intended to be used. So one of the things that an organization with some public standing and public purpose would be able to do is take a closer look at some of the security and legal issues around healthcare data. So we're seeing that as a part of what would be entrusted to the organization.
Here's a follow-up. We have, I think it's Senate Bill 251, which essentially repeals the peer review privileged data, the quality processes, focuses on opening up for litigation the inputs, whereas most of this is focusing on outputs and performance reporting. Is that what is intended by the commission, to be supportive of 251?
No. It would be unfair of me to say that because, in fact, the commission has not discussed that piece of legislation in detail. We have not looked at it. We have not thought about how it fits with the issues that we had on our mind when we put this together. If you would like for me to talk to the Quality and Transparency Committee, which is broad-based about the bill, I would be happy to do that and send you their perspective.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it would be very helpful to have that perspective if, in fact, that bill has an anticipated life, because from my perspective on the health care provider in governance and having been involved extensively in the quality processes, it would have a chilling effect.
Well, you know, and that is one of the things that I think is important for people to realize around transparency. There are times when, in fact, you need to think through what your bottom line issue is. And in some cases, when you're working on quality projects, just as when we wanted to encourage some improvements in the hospitals, it was important to create a space that would not give us a series of unintended issues like simply not reporting problems. You have to create some ability for people to feel free to raise issues and address them if you want to make some progress on them. So it's a careful thing about what's aggregate, what you put out, at what level you put it out, how good that data is, and how do you preserve the ability to do quality in an effective way? Because, in fact, that's what we want. We want a better system.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair,
just to
make a further point about Senator Morris's thoughts there, we are just starting in the last 3 or 4 years to see the medical community start to really open up and discuss issues like this. Patient Safety Commission is doing some great work. Information is being disseminated back to hospitals and physicians, and there's a growing feeling amongst medical community, I believe, that says we've got to deal with these issues. 100,000 people dying a year in American hospitals through error is going to have to end. Let's fix this. Let's start working forward. And to do that, you have to bring it forward. But if you want to end this discussion tomorrow, open it up to liability. And the cover-up will be huge. Nobody will discuss this stuff again. It'll never be brought forward. And our chances of really improving the system aren't going to be there. So this is a really touchy issue and has to be done very carefully. Or we'll lose it.
I totally agree. And, in fact, it's not necessary to... When you're trying to inform the public, when you're trying to give a level of information for choice, particularly given what the quality of the tools are that we have for measurement, you're dealing with aggregates, and you're dealing with a level that you feel comfortable in reporting. That's really different than the level that quality happens. You know, the College of Surgeons just made they have what I consider to be one of the best quality initiatives going with the NESQIP, which is a surgical quality program that started in the VA, which had phenomenal results in terms of mortality and morbidity. And they're discussing now whether or not they will make participation known. Because, in fact, personally, I'd be interested in a hospital that participated in that program, because it says something to me about the level of commitment they have to quality processes. I don't need to know the level of detail that's involved in resolving issues, working through the quality changes that need to happen. So I think you have to keep those two things in mind, and so you need to have the right composition when you put these types of organizations together. And they have to maintain their credibility. Everybody's hot on value-based purchasing. You've got a leader here in Oregon with PEB, and we really do want to support quality measures as a part of the selection criteria. We want to support what an employer can do to make people more aware of how to make a wise choice. Now, employers and plans are both, there's a little bit of skepticism, but they have a lot of ability to focus, and particularly to think about what they do in chronic care and in wellness programs. And then the last recommendation, I guess, is kind of the basic. Let's get a better information base. Let's promote electronic health records. Let's promote health information exchange. And let's have the state of Oregon show some leadership in doing that. You started with getting a coordinator, but you could make sure that that position is supported. There'll be recommendations coming out of a process on privacy and security that will come to you. And you might think about whether you want to actually support some pilots to look at being more effective in information exchange. So that's it.
Thank you, Vicki. I think what we're all talking about here is to modify the Massachusetts slogan a little bit, which was healthcare information you can trust. I think what we're after is providing healthcare information providers can use and we can trust. I think that's what this is really all about, and we need to get there. Thank you. Any questions?
No questions.
Representative Richardson.
Mr. Co-Chair. Having listened to the questions asked by our two good senators about disclosure, and having listened to the presentation, I wonder if we're talking about providing general information that is nice to know but does really no good, or are we talking about specific information that will be useful to consumers? If there's a hospital that has...
There's only two options.
Well, that's what I'm discussing. If there's a hospital, say that you have a whole series of hospitals, and one has a huge problem with staff infections and death, but on the other hand, we wouldn't want them to get a bad reputation, and so we wouldn't want that really to get out, or would we? Are we talking about a level of information that people can use? And how about a doctor? If you have 500 doctors and 10 of them cause a huge number of malpractice cases, shouldn't the public have the ability to know so that they could make a wise choice, or would it not be really fair because those doctors might be embarrassed?
Could I clarify that, Mr. Chairman? We're talking about if you've got a hospital that's got a bad track record, that the public knows about it, that the hospital knows about it, and that the hospital hopefully either improves its track record or basically loses its customer base. You are talking about information that is specific enough that it is actionable, but you need to recognize what some of the problems are with the level of information and your ability to feel confident that, in fact, it's accurate for decision-making, which means that we have to collect more, we have to collect it uniformly, we have to define it in a way that it is in fact, credible. So, yes, we want to provide information that is useful. We do not want to eliminate the ability to have quality activities or information activities going on like the Patient Safety Commission, which I believe got off to such a successful start because the Oregon legislature made a decision to test a strategy that was not a blame strategy. That's kind of a classic quality metric that you make some decisions about the kind of environment that you want to encourage. So you want to do both things. But if you put information out that is so general that doesn't really identify where there are problems, then it is not useful to the consumer, and don't waste your time and energy. And if we're going to put money and investment into the issue, then let's make it something that will make a difference. Doesn't mean it's going to be perfect. But, in fact, we all know that you have to start someplace on all of this. We've made a lot of progress over the last 5 years. And considering, you know, I just looked at the a survey that the coordinator for health information did of electronic medical record systems here in Oregon, and we are looking better than the rest of the United States. You know, so we're rapidly getting an even better ability to provide clinical data. Of course, one of the reasons we look great is because we have a very forward-thinking health plan in this area who made a commitment really early. But that's part of changing our environment. And I think that there, you know, at one point in time, you used to hear a lot more, oh, the information's not good, it's not fair, it's administrative, it's not going to be useful, et cetera. I think now that what the most of the healthcare community seems to be doing is stepping back and saying, it is an issue. We have to step up to the plate. It's our responsibility to try and figure out how to make the information as fair and equitable as possible. And by the way, transparency is a little bit of a train, so don't lie down in front of it. So I do think that there's been a lot of change in people recognizing that we're going to have a different level of information available and out there.
Thank you. Yeah, I think it's summed up in that it's information that providers can use to improve themselves, but still information that consumers can trust in making healthcare decisions. That's what we need to get to. Senator Morse.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I wouldn't want my concerns that I raised to be misinterpreted, because I think we have to have meaningful information for consumers to make decisions. And if it's hard information for the provider, then that's what motivates the provider to change and get better. But that's measuring the outcomes. All of that process that goes on, you know, behind the scenes, in peer review, in the quality processes, that, you know, that to make that discoverable would, as Senator Bates said, it would just chill out those frank and candid discussions that go on in boardrooms and committees regarding improving quality.
Mr. Chair. Senator. It's interesting, this is the second time today this has been discussed in this building. The first one occurring, we were looking at the Board of Medical Examiners budget this morning. And it's going to be a very careful balance. We need to be able to get good information out to consumers, to hospitals, to insurers, about what the quality is there at the same time. To get that information out, you've got to have a system that's closed to a bit. On the other hand, we all know of cases where very rare outlier physician or hospital has continued to go on getting in trouble and has not been called to task for that. That information has never been made available. That balance is going to be the key to this. If you push too far away, you lose it both. And that's going to be a real challenge for us. Mm-hmm. But I believe that we're doing things now for the first time that I didn't see 10 years or 5 years ago in medicine that ever happened. When I was chief of medicine, the data I got to look at the hospitals and the physicians in hospitals was just fragmentary, and we couldn't get information out. That stuff now rolling out, and it is meaningful. Does it go far enough? I don't know yet. Okay. Does it go too far? I don't think so. But does it go far enough? I don't know yet. We'll have to get more information before we make the decision. But your point's well taken. There's a balance there. And that balance has to be struck somehow.
You had that conversation this morning?
Mm-hmm.
Most everyone else in the building had it in the afternoon.
We also had it a year ago, too.
I think it was
2 years ago.
I think it was one in the afternoon, wasn't it? It seems so long ago.
Rick.
Thank you, Chair. Vic, just a quick question. Is it possible to identify states or locales outside of Oregon that you think are kind of doing it right in terms of activities, or they're in advance of us in terms of making their systems more transparent? Any place to identify?
Well, I put a couple up on the board. There are others, and they tend to be strong in particular areas, not necessarily across the range. But if you would like, we could suggest some other places that the commission can look. Florida's doing some interesting work. The state of Pennsylvania is doing some work that gets a lot of criticism, but it also has created quite a lot of change about hospital-acquired infections. You know, it's California has quite a bit of interesting work that they are doing, and of course they have the luxury of having a very large, well-funded foundation down there, but they've got HCAPs that they're going to make available. They have a whole series of other types of information that will be available. So there are lots of Wisconsin, you know, it's, and it really is sometimes they're strong in this particular area. There are other areas where they may not be quite as good. So what you would want to do, as the committee thinks its way through this, is just try and take advantage of everything that a state has learned about one of these areas and think through what it is that you're really trying to do. Are you trying to help people navigate, which is essentially what Minnesota did, or, in fact, do you want to take a much more aggressive stance about helping the community improve quality as well as communicate information?
Could you get Mr. Rakovian those various reports,
mm-hmm.
or at least models
right,
of those various
right.
states?
There's, there's a interesting piece on regional strategies, and a lot of the areas that recently got either CMS or Robert Wood Johnson funding are worth looking at, and we could get you that list, too.
Mr. Chair? Some data lend themselves to individual disclosure, and some data don't. And it really does depend, as Vicki said earlier, is what the objective is. I think the common thinking now is that we need a zero-tolerance policy on hospital-acquired infections, and that a zero-tolerance policy is feasible. And that leads us to say we need public disclosure on a mandatory basis of hospital-acquired infections. And there is at least one and more than one bill in front of the legislature in this session that will move that. Sometimes data is really to root out the bad apple. I mean, it seems to me that was the lesson of the early part of the New York cardiac surgery lesson, is there were a bunch of bad apples. And they, when you put them all up there, they disappear. They fall off the tree very, very quickly. And we'll still have improvements. And that data continues to improve over time. But one of the really purposes was to find those bad apples and get them out of the tree. And then sometimes general purpose data is very, very useful, and it doesn't necessarily have to be very good. I was involved with Kaiser Permanente at one time where I published some data that made one of the departments look particularly bad for no good reason. They didn't have to look bad. And they came out firing about how bad the data was, and it was awful, and it didn't meet the point. At the same time, they had this Quality Improvement Act going on very, very quickly that turned the situation around and turned it around very quickly because they didn't want to see what I was going to say the next time I published that data. And, I mean, I don't think you do have a dichotomy between general data that's useless and individual data that's good. I think it's a much more textured kind of situation we need to get to, and I think that's what I was hearing.
Mm-hmm.
I was hearing you say about it.
That's correct, Mr. Chairman, Senator.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Vicki, I got hung up on your first slide, and
I thought I went through that one quickly.
You did, but I got hung up basically. I guess if we're after accessible, understandable, meaningful information, but we have payers, purchasers, and consumers all operating in their own silos, I'm not sure how we get there.
I think part of the way, Senator Westlin and Senator Cruz, but I think part of the way that you get there basically is to get them all at the table and see where the commonalities are. That's the issue of why often collaborative strategies really work better than individual strategies. And in many cases, we also are going to have to do quite a bit of education of the public, of providers, of purchasers. This is really relatively a new discussion in spite of how long we've been at it. Part of what's exciting about the Robert Wood Johnson grant is that it is a very broad-based table. It has people who are advocates for consumers. It has people who represent plans. It has people who represent physicians. And they are all sitting together, each bringing their perspective about how to get it to work for everyone to get a better system.
Mr. Chair, here's a quick follow-up. And I understand that, and this is just a PowerPoint presentation. But it's kind of like looking at new ideas under the old paradigms. And, but that makes it identifiable for what we're talking about. But it's still, there's still a lot of paradigms that need to go away. And that may be one of them. I mean, because the information is gonna have a different meaning for the different groups, and so there's no commonality necessarily there, unless we do things slightly differently than we have. So,
but in fact, if we do make a more collaborative effort about information that shows us something about the way the healthcare system is performing, that's a pretty different paradigm than what we have had in place. And if we begin to think that what we are interested in is a changed and improved system, then that means that there are many players who are going to have to step out of the box that they have operated in, mm-hmm. and think about this issue differently.
Okay. By the way, you were referring to the second slide, Mr. Cruz. This was the first one.
No, he didn't understand the first one.
Oh, yeah, that's kind of what I know. Yeah. He's covered for yourself.
Just a simple country boy trying to get by.
Numbers are important. Omnipotent. Yeah. As always, thank you.
Thank you.
Superlative. I'd like to call up Joel Aereo and Corey Streisinger, familiar to one and all, DCBS Insurance Commissioner. Enter and sign in, please.
Is there a duck that's going to come down?
Yeah.
Say the magic word.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair and members of the committee. I'm Corey Streisinger, Director of the Department of Consumer and Business Services, and with me is Joel Aereo, Administrator of our Insurance Division. And we appreciate the opportunity to be here today to talk about transparency, and in particular in the context of the report that we have just put out, which I think you have in front of you, on health insurance in Oregon, which is actually the first time that we have done this, but given the feedback that we're getting, it may be something we will want to do on a regular basis. Ms. Gates has talked a lot about transparency in the area of quality. We're going to talk about primarily cost transparency, although a couple of other issues as well. And I'm going to be talking about cost transparency primarily in health insurance, and Mr. Aereo then will talk about some of the work we're doing with hospital pricing. But I do want to start with an overall comment, and one comment is that we are in this discussion, in this report, actually, as Senator Cruz said, within the existing paradigm. This is a system where we have purchasers, providers, insurers, and patients, all with a set of decisions, all with a set of information, all with a set of incentives that don't necessarily line up. And our goal is to try to improve that situation, but we certainly understand that in a completely different paradigm, we wouldn't be dealing with these same specific issues. This report itself actually is an exercise in transparency. Ms. Gates referred to transparency as getting information to accessible, understandable, and meaningful information on quality and cost for payers, purchasers, and consumers. And, of course, purchasers of health insurance, as well as you as policymakers, may very well have an interest in the state of the health insurance industry, market segments, profitability, how regulation takes place, medical trends, and so on. And so one goal of putting this report out was to, in fact, make that information available to those who would find it useful. And there are a number of specific recommendations in the report that are aimed at greater transparency in different ways. One of them, for example, is recommendation number 2, which would make health insurance rate filings public, again, for people who want to know what the rate filing is based on as they're making a health insurance purchasing decision. Further information through public rate filings would be one way to get there. Another issue of interest to purchasers of health insurance, and those frequently, of course, are large groups, employers, might be not just the cost of the health insurance that they're purchasing, the premium, the benefit package that they're purchasing, but also what is my health insurance company doing overall to create a more effective, cost-effective health insurance system. So one of our recommendations, recommendation number 6, is to, in fact, make better information available to the purchasers of health insurance about what their health insurers are doing in that regard. And in section 6 of the report, we actually go through an outline some of what health insurers are doing, whether it is providing better information or using tiered pricing or using prior authorization, or one of the issues that Ms. Gates brought up in her slide, pay for performance. That is, actually, I was very interested to see that slide saying people are interested in knowing. They think it's quite important to know what their health insurance company is doing to incent quality among providers. Well, that's something that in our recommendation number 6, we recommend that that's one of the things health insurance companies could usefully tell the public about. So a number of the recommendations and issues dealt with in the report have that type of transparency aspect to them. But the one that I want to talk about most in most detail at the moment is the costs experienced not by the health insurance purchaser, but by the consumer, by the patient. And this is one of the great oddities in the purchase of health care services. That is, often in making a decision about health care, we, of course, care about the quality of the outcomes that we're going to get, but often we do also care about the cost. And, in fact, private health insurance has been moving more and more toward shifting costs toward individual consumers, with one articulated reason being we want consumers to have incentives to make cost-effective decisions. We want, as the phrase you've probably heard, is we want consumers to have skin in the game. We want you to know, we want you to choose cost-effective outcomes and have not, and have at least to some extent your own financial decisions aligned with that purchasing decision. Well, it's very difficult to do that if you can't find out what it's going to cost. And that is, in fact, the case, by and large, in healthcare today. You can't find out what it's going to cost before making the healthcare decision. And as Ms. Gates said, part of transparency is having that information be usable, and that means at a time prior to your needing to make a decision. And this could be a situation where your physician says to you, either of these prescription drugs would be suitable for your condition. You have a choice to make. Either of these diagnostic procedures would be an acceptable way to address your particular situation. You have a choice to make. I have privileges at either of these two hospitals. The surgery which you need to get done, you can have it done at either hospital. Your choice. Obviously, you want to know some of that quality information that Ms. Gates has talked about, but you probably also want to know what it's going to cost you. And that is your share, your copays, your deductibles, your what it's going to come out of your pocket, because everybody in the system wants your incentives to be aligned to make a good and cost-effective decision. And the interesting thing is not only don't you know, but there's nobody to ask. If you ask your doctor will not know. If you call the hospital and ask them, they will not know. In fact, what they will probably ask you first is, what's your insurance? But even then, they may not know. Or if you are going to get a particular diagnostic proceeding, for example, the ultimate cost may be a combination of a charge by the facility, a charge by the physician, a charge by the anesthetist, charges for the lab test, charge for the medication, and there's nobody who can tell you what the procedure is going to cost. And so we would like, and we were asked in coming to this committee to talk about a vision, and the vision is you should know before you decide. You should be able to know. And that is a problem in some cases, and we want to see whether we can, working with the insurance industry, figure out a way to solve it. And we have a couple of proposals on the table. The challenge is a little different depending on whether you're dealing with an in-network provider or an out-of-network provider. And, of course, most healthcare these days is provided through PPOs, preferred provider organizations, where your insurance company has negotiated a set of prices and discounts with in-network providers. And that you are going to pay your share, your percentage, and of that negotiated price. When you are dealing with an out-of-network provider, however, your insurance company has not negotiated anything up front. And what you are going to pay under the terms of your insurance contract is your share of what is called uniform, customary, and reasonable charges. And there is no way to tell what those are up front either. So, proposals that we have on the table, and this is in front of Representative Greenlick's committee, and again, I'm going to talk just very conceptually because there's a lot of work to do on the details. We understand that the vision is one thing and the practicality is something else, but in an ideal world, you would be able to, when you know what your options are in terms of procedures and providers, call up your insurance company or go to your insurance company's website and put in the information about the procedure and the provider and your insurance plan and be told what it's going to cost, and so that you could actually compare and you could also plan and you could make quality decisions. And that may be easier for simple things. It may be easier for a diagnostic imaging than for a hip surgery, for example. But at some level, you should be able, at least for basic procedures that are going to be fairly predictable, to find out. Now, your insurance company and your providers can figure it out at the end because they send you a bill. And we'd like to see if we can move that up. The situation with respect to out-of-network providers is more complicated because, of course, your providers' prices aren't regulated, but we would nevertheless like to see if we can get more information in the consumer's hands about how that uniform, customary, and reasonable charges situation works, and whether that is setting a standard, whether it's having clarity about the standard. Somehow you should be able to find out whether or not what your charges are going to be. And that's particularly important because you may be in a situation where, for example, you're using an in-network provider for surgery, but the anesthetist is out of network. So you really actually do care about this issue. So that's what we've been spending a fair amount of time thinking about and working on and are going to be continuing to work on with respect to insurance cost transparency. And I'm going to turn it over then, unless there's questions about that specifically, to Mr. Ario to talk about the hospital side of the equation.
Questions? Yes, sir. It's comments like drug prices. I know today with Hippocrates, I can go on and we can look at by drug, by plan, how much this drug is going to cost. And so that information is available, and we share that on a daily basis with patients. The issues on cost, a lot of times in primary care offices, it's, well, how much is the x-ray going to cost? How much is the CT? How much is the MRI? It's procedures that are easy to pinpoint. It's, you know, we don't deal with, you know, how much is your hip replacement going to cost? That's a different issue. But I think there are places you can start that are very easy, and I think most places would be absolutely attuned to developing a system based on, you know, let's start at the bottom and work up instead of try to figure out how much the craniotomy is going to cost. So,
Mr. Chair, Representative Maurer, and there may be some of the more complex and this gets back to the individual versus aggregate question. It may be that for something more complex, the most useful information is aggregate or average within a certain degree of certainty. But yes, for something simple, there's no reason not to have actual cost.
Simple and standard. Thanks a lot.
Last session, in Senator Lana Sanderson's committee, there were a number of bills on cost containment, one of them dealing with hospitals, and then the hospitals came up with the cost comparison themselves. There was a publication made, and I believe it's online, that you could look at, for instance, in my city, I could look at Peace Health, or I could look at McKinsey Willamette, and I could compare the cost. Now, is that a valid comparison? Are you familiar with that document?
Mr. Chair, Senator Moore said yes, and that's actually a terrific segue to what Mr. Ario is going to talk about, the strengths and weaknesses of that approach and some of the next steps there.
Mm-hmm. One last question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One of the things that enters into this equation and makes it very difficult is quality when you're talking to the consumer. And I think most insurers, for the most part, and I stand to be corrected if I'm wrong, sign up physician panels, make arrangements with hospitals basically on a financial basis with sort of an assumption that, for the most part, healthcare quality is pretty standard and not significantly different. And I could be wrong about that, but unless there's dramatic outliers, they don't do that. And from a patient's point of view, when they're trying to select through this thing, they don't get a look at that quality issue there. And often they don't know because they've got you know, insurance with different panels, where they really get the information. You think you can really sort that through? I mean, we got situations now where one insurance company might sign up for one panel that then is just that same panel without the physicians even knowing it, are passed on to 2, 3, 4, 5, 7, 8 other insurers, and nobody knows what panel they're on and what's going on. I mean, this is going to be very complex to do, and the quality issue is very real.
Mr. Chair, Senator Bates, on the quality side, I don't think in an ideal world, yes, you would be able to get information about cost and quality at your fingertips. One of the things that several of the carriers, and in preparing this report, we gathered data, but we also went and visited with the major health insurance carriers to talk about what it is that they're doing that's aimed at cost control, quality, this whole range of issues. And a number of them are looking at issues regarding provider quality, compliance with best practices, compliance with standards, and at least one of the insurers is, in fact, publishing that data to providers, and they are thinking about publishing to members, the insureds. So we are not, at this point, looking at requiring that type of information to be published. We do think that a useful thing for insurers to do would be to talk about what they are doing. That is, we could see, for example, having each insurer file with us a report on what types of things they are doing to promote cost and quality, so that an insurer which is doing those types of things would have a place to say so, and someone who wants to know what's my insurer doing to ensure quality could find out. I don't know if that's responsive to your question.
Mr. Chair, my concern is this. I think there are issues here. And one of the biggest glaring ones is that depending on what part of the state you're in, what you might have done for you for a certain disease process varies tremendously. Whether it's a certain type of operation for a certain disease could be 2 or 3 times more likely to occur in one community compared to another. And that's not possibly related to quality of care. It's practices. And that's the kind of information that would really help consumers. If you have prostate cancer in a certain city and your chances are 5 times as high you're going to have surgery for it compared to radium implants, another one, and you don't know which decision to make, that's real information about quality. Not so much whether someone's doing something bad, but what one do you want to have done?
If you can put the outcomes on the back side.
That's right. And so that's the kind of quality information that is really important for consumers. And something that I don't hear a discussion going on here about tonight. And that's just one very, I mean, I think quality isn't that different from place to place, then why we have this big disparity from one city to another and what kind of procedures you have for the same diagnosis code. And that's my point.
Mr. Chair, right now we don't know anything about cost or quality. And if I'm a consumer,
like that one,
I don't know either of them. So it would seem to me you'd be further ahead at least knowing what the cost difference was.
Yeah, they are interlocked, though. I thought you're good point.
Yeah. And to that, you can also get unintended consequences, because if you don't know the quality and you find out that there's one doctor who's got 20 years experience and he charges $20,000, and there's another doctor who only has 15 years experience and he charges $12,000, which doctor do you want? Maybe the higher one must be more qualified, and so you end up with the exact opposite of what you think you get when you have the prices laid out.
There's a danger, but I'll take the
$12,000. You want to come up here?
I would too.
Well, I do want to make a comment about the, because what you're talking about is the issue that I think John Kistoffer raised on a series of issues where there's a variety of things that may be appropriate or that may be done in a circumstance, and it's the patient who needs to figure out. You can have information and quality information out there about that. What I've read is that, in fact, that's the one where it's the combination of information to the patient about possible consequences, possible options, in collaboration with their caretaker. That's really what that whole decision support to the patient is when you've got a preference-sensitive care situation. And we need to do a lot more about that, and it's really part of controlling cost and maintaining quality at the same time. But it's a little different than some of what we've talked about. It will point people, perhaps, to saying we need this discussion. But we've got to cover the range, I think. Sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Let's move on here. Mr. Commissioner?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, or Mr. Chairs, I guess it is, here, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Joel Larry. I'm the administrator of the Insurance Division with the Department of Consumer and Business Services. And I'll pick up right with Senator Morissette's question about last session. I'm going to talk about the hospital pricing issue, kind of walk through quick five steps that we've taken on this issue with a little lesson learned, sort of how you can draw some broader conclusions from what we've done on this issue, and then conclude with a couple thoughts, that some of which touch on your cost and quality concerns there too. Senator Morissette has good memory of the 2005 session. There was a bill in front of the legislature to require hospitals to disclose certain kinds of pricing data. The hospitals responded to that by taking initiative and putting up a website that provided charge information, billed charge information at that point. The first point I'd make, that was really the starting point for this project. There's some ancient history of conflict that we'll put in the dustbin of history here and start with that website as the starting point for the current iteration of this project. And the first point I'd make was that was an important step for the hospitals to take. Some people immediately criticized the hospitals because it wasn't enough, but I think in this transparency area, you got to start with something, and that was a good start. And they provided information that still does provide some frame of reference for people who want to get a sense of what the hot prices are hospital to hospital. Having said that, I can tell you that the next step is that billed charge information is not the most common pricing information used in the marketplace. Most people pay some level of discount off of those billed charges. In fact, people typically pay enough of a discount that some of the hospitals have recently entered into agreements with various plaintiffs groups to agree not to charge those billed charges to certain indigent patients because they recognize that those are quite high, really outlier type charges. So while it was a good starting point, the billed charges were not a complete solution to the problem. So that led to a work group. We created a work group after the legislative session in 2006 to say how can we best augment what the hospitals are already providing on the billed charge issue. And this is lesson number two, and it's echoing what Vicki said, which is on these kinds of issues, you got to get everybody in the room. And there are a lot of stakeholders. It's not just the hospitals here. It was also the insurers who have some data that we needed. It's the business interests who've been part of the process for a long time of trying to get access to some of this information. It's the labor community who is very interested in hospital pricing and how it works and what we can do to try to contain some of those hospital costs. It's also run-of-the-mill consumer groups. It's a broad range of interests, and so that Senator Cruz, to your question, yes, there are a broad range of interests. There were multiple reasons why people were interested in our project. There wasn't just one reason. The hospitals kept saying to us, tell us exactly what you want and what is the exact audience that you're speaking to, and our answer was, we're speaking to multiple audiences who have multiple interests, and that's how this game works. But we kept everybody at the table there and eventually worked out a data call to be done of the insurers that was going to give us claims data from the insurers. And this happened in the fall of this year, and this is lesson number three. We could have gone for the whole enchilada and said, you know, we want kind of all of your claims data that has any relationship to the hospitals. But as we talked it through with all the stakeholders, the data that we thought we'd have the best chance of having some consistency to that we could really use was the inpatient data. There's a lot more outpatient data that's out there, and these days, you know, nobody lets you stay in the hospital very long, even if you want to. Most people don't. So there's a lot more outpatient work, but that whole set of data was going to be much more complicated. So we focused on the inpatient, and I think that's a very important lesson here on any of these transparency initiatives is be very targeted, define carefully what you're after, and go for the targeted starting point. A first step is better than no steps. So we had this data call, and because we'd worked in a collaborative way with everybody through the process, the hospitals, which previously had been very much, you know, in an oppositional mode to this whole project, came along with us, and as we put the data call out there in the fall, we had some letters from some of the hospitals saying, you know, there's a series of legal issues we can raise, and we're very concerned about these, and we may raise them, but in the end, none of them push those legal issues. The data call was completed. We got all the data that we needed from, that we asked for, from all of the insurers. And we are now in the fourth stage of the process, which is to massage that data, to refine that data, to turn it into data under which our goal, the fifth stage, which is publishing it, we will be able to publish data that says here for each hospital in this state that we have adequate data for is the average discounted price that insurance companies pay for those procedures. So you'll be able to look at the bill charge over here, and then you'll be able to look to at right next to it. And we hope in the end this is published right on the hospital's website. It'll probably also be published on a state website. Here's what the average insurers, which are the largest payers in the system, there's also Medicare, Medicaid, and number of other payers, but here's that number, and it's not giving away secrets, and that's the key to why we were involved in the process. Disclosing individual insurance rates gets into antitrust kind of issues and may affect the competitiveness of the market and so forth. But taking it all together under our umbrella and then aggregating it and then giving out average data is meaningful numbers for people to get a better sense of price, and it doesn't affect the competitive market. So we're in that stage four, and the lesson in stage four is that the data is never good the first time through. So I think we're now at a point where we think about 60% of the data we got is basically looks like it's complete at this stage. The other 40% we probably aren't even going to be able to use because the carriers who submitted it probably haven't kept the records in the way they needed to even go back and give us the full data set that we need. So I'm jumping a little ahead. We're going to have those discussions with some of the technical actuarial groups in the next few weeks. But the fifth step about publishing is, I've learned long ago in this business that when you go to publish, it gets everyone's attention. It doesn't get people's attention very much until you tell them you're going to publish it. And then invariably, all kinds of new objections come out about how it's not quite going to be right. And in every one of these I've been part of, if we decided not to publish the data, then, you know, the cooperation to get the data better, it somehow kind of just disappears into the woodwork, and you never quite have the incentive for anybody to make the improvements. If you publish it when it's not quite right, and it won't be quite right, perfect this first time through, the people who see the flaws in it will have every incentive to work with us to improve it the next time around. So that's what we're trying to achieve in this project. We're one of the few states that's doing this particular project. I'll conclude with just a couple sort of broad lessons that kind of relate to some of the larger discussion. First, I'd echo what Vicki said, that I think one role that the state can clearly play here is to be the clearinghouse. There's multiplicity of audiences, there's multiplicity of interests. The state can be a good clearinghouse. I looked at Florida's site today just to get a sense of what is out there kind of cutting edge, because they've got quite a bit in this clearinghouse way. And there's just tons of more and more information, and the state can just put all of it up there in some organized fashion for people to work through. So I think that's one key role. Second point is there are these multiple audiences, and we should be aware of it and not get caught in this trap of, well, what's the one audience that we're trying to appeal to? And it's not just the end user consumer, by the way. Most insurance information that we publish publicly, the average consumer would have not a clue what that information means. But we put it out there, technical annual statement data and so forth. There are a lot of people that watch that, and they're specialized in turning what we put out, the insurance nerds put out, into things that other audiences understand, and gradually it filters down through the process. So that's, I think, the second lesson. Third one is this cost and quality issue. I kind of think it takes care of itself in most of the areas with healthcare, because presumably hardly anybody is going to look at just quality data, just price, and say, I'm going totally on price when it comes to healthcare. They're going to say, you know, I better know something about why this guy is so cheap or so expensive. You know, hopefully that's human nature. I mean, it would be, I'd go to the cheap guy, but I'd ask why first, you know. But anyway, I think part of the little data out here begets that question, and we intend on this. We've had a lot of help from the Office of Health Policy and Research on massaging the data, and the long-term goal here is to link up the data that we have here to their quality data that Vicki already mentioned, so that there would be, people could look at the average price, and then what's the quality measurements from their office. And then the final point I'd make about government is this stuff's going to happen mostly outside of government. I mean, that the market is moving this direction. It's a train, as Vicky said, that's going down those tracks. And so half of our job is kind of stay out of the way of the train, so don't do any harm here by kind of creating transparency initiatives that slow down that innovation process. That's a question I constantly ask about this particular project, is we want to make sure we're doing something that catalyzes more transparency, not something that gets people to polarize and sort of be oppositional to transparency. The state needs to be strategic about where it intervenes and where it tries to be, in addition to a clearinghouse, a kind of mover. And I think on this particular project, it's a good example. The insurers couldn't have done it themselves. The hospitals could have done it, but might not have had quite the incentive to do it by themselves. So we're strategically positioned as the key service. But those are, on a particular initiative, you ask the question, is this the right strategic one for the state to do? With that, I'll close and be happy to answer any questions.
Representative Cannon.
Thank you, Co-Chair Wesson. My question relates to this data that you're planning to publish. Do I understand correctly that a consumer will be able to go to the website and know for a particular procedure in a particular hospital what the insurers, on average, pay?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, that is correct, and that gets to this multiplicity of audiences. One of the things that the hospitals consistently pointed out when they were still not sure whether they're going to cooperate or not was, how is this going to be useful to the average consumer? Because they actually only have one insurer and one rate, and the average rate may not be the rate they have. So this isn't the perfect information for that consumer, but it's a mite site closer than the bill charge data. It's moving towards something that's directly useful to the end-use consumer.
So can I just follow up quickly? And so it's per procedure, per hospital, but not per insurer. It's just an average of what all the insurers pay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cannon, yes, that's correct on this project. There is another project that's kind of interesting here, which is one of the insurers, Aetna, has been a market leader in posting on their websites in 14 or 15 markets, not Oregon, exactly what they pay the doctors on their discounted rates. So there's still a lot of discussion about how these individual rates are secret and have to be protected, and it would ruin the competitiveness of the market not to do so, and some of that sounds persuasive to me. But it is interesting to note in other markets, Aetna said, we're just going to go ahead and publish what we pay the doctors. That's our sort of aggressive form of transparency.
Thank you.
Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. How does this get us any closer to discovering true cost? And how do we get around to unbundling to clearly define where the shifts are?
Mr. Chair, Senator Cruz, I would submit to you it's a step in that direction. As this data gets published, people will ask those kinds of questions. Why is my price higher or lower than the next guy's? And there'll be explanations about cross-subsidies and that sort of thing that will start to untangle the mess. But just like the hospital's bill charge data was the starting point here for us, I thought it was a good first step. Okay. This is another step that will beget more questions. It's not the end step, it's just going to beget more questions. But I think the key question is it moves us in the right direction. It will allow for the next level of more refined questions. It's moving towards better transparency.
Mr. Chair.
Last question.
Key question is when?
Mr. Chair.
That's a good question.
And Mr. Chair. As soon as possible. I'm going to answer more than that. Our original timetable had us at the end of February. Today's timetable has us possibly as early as the end of March if everything goes well from here. But we definitely have a strong, strong notion that we want this to be published before the end of the legislative session so that if anything goes wrong, we can come back to you and say, here's why we need more authority to do this right.
Yeah. Information you can use. When? As soon as possible. You really mean it.
One of these days.
Okay, we've got a very few minutes for... Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Very few minutes for Dan Fields from Kaiser and Nancy Nevins from Lifeways. Enter, sign in, please.
Baby steps.
You are from Kaiser, right, Dan?
Yes, I am.
Hey, good memory.
We're
At least I was when I left Portland about 4 o'clock. So, I'm Dan Field from Kaiser Permanente. With me is Nancy Nevins from LifeWise Health Plans. We will be very brief. Don't have any formal presentation here. Just want to respond briefly to some of the comments made. I would just note that the major health plans in the state do compete aggressively for market share, but we work hard to collaborate on the public policy front. Along those lines, we've been working for approximately a year with the division around the transparency initiative, and Nancy's going to detail that in a bit, talk about the project we have now underway, the work group with Representative Greenlick on House Bill 2213, which addresses cost transparency. A couple quick points I'd like to make, and I would really, to my own surprise, I'm going to echo Joel on this.
We're shocked.
Yeah.
No respect, eh?
Yeah.
He passed out.
The consumer marketplace, as Joel noted, is really driving rapid change in cost transparency. That's exciting news. It won't all need to come from the legislature, although I think legislators play a key role in continuing to push the market forward in collaboration and to the benefit of purchasers and consumers. We are working hard as individual plans to deliver the kind of transparency that will benefit consumers and benefit plans in the marketplace. If the committee at some point would like to have a more formal presentation around what that looks like on a carrier-specific basis, we'd be glad to collaborate with each other, pick some great examples of innovative practices, and bring that back to the committee. We're not doing that today, but just to let you know that just some great work going on in the industry around delivering more and more accurate information to consumers. Last quick point before I turn it over to Nancy, along the lines of Senator Bates' comment, I think cost information must be paired with quality information, and that's a theme that the committee has picked up on and obviously recognizes. If we don't do that, it's sort of like requiring extensive disclosure on the price of a car without requiring that you tell them what kind of car they're buying with the price that they're paying. So those two things must be paired, and as you folks do your work moving forward, I would urge you and encourage you, and it sounds like you're already there, to keep those two closely tied together. The quality data alluded to in Vicki Gates' presentation, you should know, is among leading edge nationally. It's also being done with tremendous financial and in-kind support from the industry. So we are very much participants in the coalitions that are producing the kind of work that she described, and we expect to continue that role. Let me ask Nancy just to talk briefly on behalf of the industry about the work we're doing specifically on the Cost Transparency Initiative.
Hi, I'm Nancy Nevins with LifeWise Health Plan of Oregon, and I'm their Regulatory Affairs Manager. And I'm going to be one of the technical representatives on the work group committee. And we've been working with the division for an extended period of time regarding their draft bill. And we've provided them with a lot of information regarding some of the tools that we have in place right now in the industry. And I do want to echo Dan's comments and Joel's comments in regards to a lot of the information we heard tonight is information we've been discussing for our health plans for the last 2 or 3 years and going in the direction to help consumers to get information, make informed choices regarding their health care needs. And some of the things that are out there are you can see information regarding your claims information, your deductible information, where you are and your benefits, if you have any, you know, benefit maximums regarding certain services. You can see information regarding treatment plans, what types of questions you should talk to your doctor given certain specific conditions. Information that we have available in some of the other plans is on zip codes and cost range for certain services. And for things that are fairly routine, quote unquote, like mammograms, it will give a range of service from X dollars to X dollars. Colonoscopies, it gives information regarding range of colonoscopies. And I know one of the conversations I had with Shelley Bain at the insurance division is that there's such a range for range of colonoscopies going in from a routine to depending on if you have polyps removed and so forth, that the range was amazing. And just to look at that information for a consumer to understand that these are some of the questions that one can address is very important. So we're looking forward to having continuing discussions regarding the tools that are available, looking for meaningful information for consumers. And to that end, one of the things that I'm going to be participating in later on this week is a four-hour
customer focus in regards to wellness programs, tools that are available for consumers, what they would like to see, what they find is meaningful, what they would feel would be important in order to make their decisions. So,
super.
If you have any questions?
Any questions? We have a historic, I think, moment. If we could pass this gavel down to Representative Cannon, he can gavel out the House Healthcare Subcommittee on Access.
Is there a script for this? This is my first time.
I adjourn
the. Oh, now I have to get it right. The House Subcommittee on Access in Healthcare.
Hey. That's the first time you've officially held a gavel?
Yes, it is.
That's why I said it's a historic moment.
And now for the group that has the stamina, just name for me.
And orders for the, any comments for the good of the order? Committee, thank all you for coming and staying late. We adjourn the Senate.